My name is Bernard McNaball from the University of Central Lancashire, and this is interview 6 of the oral history project in Frenchwood. The date is the 11th of June 2007, and I am interviewing
Dorothy Taylor.
When were you born, Dorothy?
The 11th of March, 1920.
What was the name of your father?
Nicholas Wright.
And can you remember his date and place of birth?
Yes. He was born in Trell Falls, Brough. In Marshside lingo, it's Trelfer's Brew. It's Trell Falls, Brough. The reason I know that, when I was young, my mum sent me to Marshside to get some tomatoes, and she said, go to Trelfer's Brew and get some tomatoes. And when I got there, the person who was selling tomatoes, she said, hey, they're a pretty lass, what's the name? And I said, Dorothy Wright. And she said, Reed? Who was the fader? So I said, Nicholas Wright. And then her husband came in and she said, this is Dorothy Wright. Her father was Nicholas Wright. He was born in Trelfer's Brew. Aye, it's Illy Terry's next wench. And I've remembered that all my life. I am Illy Terry's next wench. Harry was my grandfather, of course. And what Illy was short of, I never did find out. I always meant to.
So where was your father? Where was your father born?
He was born in Southport, at Marshside at Southport.
And do you know the date of his birth?
Yes.
It's okay, Dorothy, just give me a rough estimate.
It was the 26th of July.
Oh, I can't remember. And what year was that?
Little 18th of July, but I haven't got the date.
It's okay. What did he do for a living?
He was a tailor. He was a bespoke tailor. He worked for Moran's. It was quite a decent tailor's on Lord Street. It was a very good tailor. He served his apprenticeship there and worked for
Did he work for them all his life?
All his life. Until the war. And then they closed down, but he got a job in Waterloo, outside Liverpool, and he travelled there for a year, I think. And then, of course, he retired.
Can you remember what age he was when he died?
Mother was 70. Father... he would be about 75, I think. You know, I have the birth certificates, the marriage certificates, a copy in there somewhere. I can't. I mislaid them.
That's okay. It's okay.
That's silly, isn't it?
What about your mother? Can you remember?
My mother.
Her date and place of birth?
She was born in Southport at, I think, Bispham Road in Southport. And her birthday. Oh my goodness. No. It's gone. It may come back to me in a minute. But she died when she was 70.
Do you know what year that was?
Now then, she was 70. I was 42 when I was born. I was 42. When mother was 42 when I was born. Oh, I am getting so mixed up, aren't I? My father died in 1956, so my mother died in 1950.
Okay.
Yeah.
And she was 70 when she died?
Yeah.
So she would have been born in 1880.
Yes.
What was her age at marriage?
I can't remember that. But I was the youngest of seven children.
Okay.
My elder sister was 18. She was engaged to be married when I was born, and my youngest brother was 8 years older than I. So being born in 1920, I presume I was an afterthought after the war. But I had a very happy childhood.
Did any of your brothers or sisters die young?
One of my brothers, Dick, died. He went into the army when the war started. He was called up. He went in as B1, and he was signed out as A1, and he died of a heart attack when he was 50 something. And Stan, they're all in here somewhere, if I can only find them. My youngest brother, he was 80 something when he died. He went out to Canada. He served in the Navy all during the war, and then when he came out of the war, he went to Canada. And his widow is still there. We went out to visit them in 1988, and he died 12 months after we visited, so I was very pleased we'd been.
So how many brothers and sisters?
I had two sisters, Elsie and Alice, and Dick and Bill, four brothers.
Yeah. Okay.
That's it.
Can you remember anything about your grandparents?
Only my grandfather, Howard, that my mother's father, and he lived in Lawton Street, which was an extension of Warren Road, where I was born. So we were very close. He lived with my Aunt Jane, because my grandma was dead. I don't remember my grandma Howard at all. I remember Aunt Jane. And I remember Grandma Wright, but I don't remember Grandfather Wright. But I remember Grandma Wright, and I think she must have had what would be now Alzheimer's. Mm. Because we had a very long back garden, and I used to go and play in the back garden, of course. And if Grandma Wright was there, she wouldn't let me go out into the garden in case I got run over by a tram. So I think she was, she was getting old. But I was, being the youngest of the family, I really was, I was spoiled. My two sisters both passed their exam to go to Southport High School. But of course, it was in the Depression. My parents, you know, they couldn't afford, that would be in the war. And they couldn't afford to let them go. But of course, when I passed my exam in 1930, I went. So I was very fortunate. I went to Southport High School.
So describe the, you know, your home, where you lived, the type of, what sort of house was it?
It was semi-detached. There was a small garden at the front, a very long back garden, and then a wall, and a field, and then a golf course. So we weren't overlooked or anything. Plenty of space to play. It was just a three-bedroom house. There was like the extension at the back for the wash house and outside toilets, of course, because in 1920 they didn't have inside toilets in working class houses. So that was that. But
so what about the downstairs? There were three bedrooms and
there were, yes, downstairs there was the we went through the front door into the hall, and off the hall there was the best room, and it was used on Sundays or if visitors came. And then in the back there was the living room, and then there was the kitchen and the pantry.
So was the front room the parlour?
Oh yes, the parlour. Yes, yes, it was the parlour. And it was always very well decorated, because yes, one of my brothers was a painter and decorator.
All right.
So, of course, it was always very nicely decorated, you know. Even though we weren't well off, it was good.
What was that? Was it rented or owned?
Oh, it was rented.
Yes.
I believe the pair were built for £325. My mother used to tell me. And then when Bill came out of the army, my mum had died. Dad was by himself. Dick had died. And so Bill and Jenny, his wife, came to live to look after my father, and they bought the house as sitting tenants. And then Bill went to Canada and he sold the house to my niece, who now lives in Longbridge. But he sold the house to my niece for, I think it was about £800. And they are now selling, oh well, heaven alone knows. I mean, well, 30 years ago, I think, they were about 21,000, something like that, for a 325.
When you were a child, how many people were living in the house?
There was Mum and Dad had the middle bedroom, and I slept in the middle middle bedroom with them. And in the front bedroom, there were Bill and Sam. And then in the other bedroom, there was Dick, because he used to work in a whitesmith's, and he contracted TB. So of course he had his own bedroom, and when he came back. And then, of course, well, they all got married and went, and that was that. So.
What was White's, where he worked?
A whitesmith. It was not like a blacksmith. It was more or less a blacksmith. Only it wasn't. Blacksmiths shoe horses and do things like that. Whitesmiths, they do decorative ironwork. Mm. And they said, I remember my mother saying at the time, we went to the doctor's and I had a cough, and she said, I'm worried about Dorothy because of Dick being in hospital with TB. And he said, you don't need to worry, it's not that kind of TB. It's caused through the excessive heat and then coming out into the cold and that kind of thing. So he said it wasn't contagious or infectious, so he didn't need to worry about me, so that was that.
What about the area that you lived in, Dorothy? Can you describe it? Local shops, play areas, that type of thing?
Well, it was, how can I describe it? There aren't any around here. They all had front gardens, and we had the long back garden, as I've said, but the houses are opposite. They had a short back garden, and they backed onto the High Park Road, who also had a short back garden and a small front garden. There was a shop on the corner called, originally, Mrs. Reeves. And then it was taken, when Mrs. Reeves died, a person called Tom Holt bought that. And when we came to live in Preston, Tom Holt was still at that shop, although his son was managing it then. And across the road, there was another grocer's shop. That was... I'll think in a minute. And so, and then at the other end of the road, there was a grocer's shop. And then at the opposite corner, there was a small cinema called the Tivoli. And it was owned by Mrs. Knight, and she was a friend of my mum. So they used to go to the women's... belonging to the church, the women's group of church. So of course if there was any anything on at the pictures, you know, that I wanted to see, I used to go, and Mrs. Knight's son just used to say, hello Dorothy, go upstairs. We used to just go up the stairs and sit on wherever I wanted, you know. And that was that.
What was your relationship like with the neighbours?
Oh, they were very friendly.
Yeah.
The people next door, the people on both sides. We like I do now, we spoke to everybody down the street. I mean, we just knew everyone. And everybody was quite friendly. There was a little old lady lived across the road, and I'm afraid we weren't, my brothers and I, my younger brother, the other ones were growing up. We weren't very kind, because Bill used to say, here she comes, head first, and I rather fancy she had cervical spondylitis, but she was always bent over, you know, and of course, being children, we used to think she was an old witch. Mm. Yes. Like children do. Mm. You only realise these things as you get older, don't you? But everybody was very friendly. My best friend lived across the road from me. Her name was Phoebe Blundell. And I was friendly with her until she was about 2 years older than I was. And then they moved away. So I think later on she married a policeman. So of course we lost touch then. But it was very funny. When Dad came back from the war, he did not go to chapel. He was, I think Mum and Dad were married in the Congregational Chapel in Blackburn, I think it was, either Blackburn or Bolton, where they were married. And when Dad came back from the war, he never went to church after that.
Which war was this?
1914-18.
So did he serve all the way through?
Yes. He came back in 1919. So.
And did he join up in 1914?
Yeah. And when I was 7, I wanted to join the Brownies. And the only Brownie pack was the Independent Methodist in High Park Road, the next road. So, of course, I went to and joined the Brownie pack, and I went to the Independent Methodist. And then we didn't have a guide pack, but the only guide pack, the nearest one, was Emmanuel Church in Marshside, and that was Church of England. So I moved up from the Brownies to Emmanuel Church Guides. So I went to church parade. I used to go to Emmanuel Church, you see. I was brought up at school at St. Simon and St. Jude's Church School. So there we are. It's what you call rather a mixture, really. But it was a case of convenience, because I really did want to be a Brownie and I really did want to be a guy. So that was that.
Coming back to your family, it's something that we'll touch on in a little while about the guys and the Brownies. Mm. Just coming back to the family, you were the youngest in the family.
Yeah.
Were you expected to do any chores? Did you have to work around the house?
Well, I used to help to wash up and do things like that, but no work as such, until one day my mum used to make bread always made bread. And I used to come home from school and I'd see her kneading away at this bread. And I said, please, can I do that? And she said, yes, come on, I'll show you how to do it. So I was kneading away at this bread. I thought it was lovely. And when Dad came home from work, I made some little palm cakes, you know, after that I put the bread in the tins. And she said, Mum said to my dad, how do you like this bread? And he said, it's all right, very nice. Oh, Dorothy made it. So he said, oh, did she? So he said, well, it's very nice. So she said, right, so you can do that from now on. So from that day, I was the official bread maker. And that was that. So many a day, I rode it many a time when I wanted to go out to play. And she said, I think it's time we had some bread. We're getting a bit low. So I had to make the bread.
Just keeping on that subject a little bit, what about shopping? What type of shops were there in the area?
Well, they all seemed to be grocers on the shop corner, on the street corners. The one opposite to Mrs. Rees was Mr. Fleetwood, and they were a grocer, green grocer. They sold everything. And then at the top of Warren Road, there was Moss Lane, there was a golf club, and then across the road from there was Wood End Farm, where John was born. And then just round the corner from there, there was a grocer's shop, and a hardmonger and an ironmonger rather, and then two houses, and John's auntie lived in one of those. And then next to that, my sister and her husband, they had the butcher's shop, and next to that was a chemist shop, and then next to that was beautiful cake shop. And then there was the Temperance Hall, and then there was the Wesleyan Chapel where I went to Brownies. So it was quite compact, really.
Who did the shopping? Was it your mother?
Oh, my mother. Oh, yes. Unless, of course, I came in from school and she wanted something. Just run to the corner shop. Oh, and I must tell you this, our headmistress at school, at the high school, she was very strict. And if we were coming home from school and we took our school cap off, school hat and gloves, we always had to wear hat and gloves, a velour hat in the winter, and like a little green forage cap you could wear, and then a Panama hat in summer. And Mrs. Diamond, who was the headmistress, she used to ride a bike at first till she got a car. And she used to go home at the same way that we came home from school. And of course, if she saw us without a cap or gloves, she'd get off her bike and say, see me in the morning outside my office. Oh dear. And then we got a telling off about letting the tone of the school down and not being good pupils and that kind of thing. So it got to the stage where I came in from school and Mum said, just go to the shop, you know, bring a loaf or whatever. I used to put my cap and gloves on to go to the shop. To go to the shop, it was just habit, you know. It was, she was a very strict person, but she was very fair. She was very nice, but she really was strict.
Yeah. Was there lots of home cooking or convenience foods?
Oh, no convenience foods, no. It was a roast on a Sunday, and Monday you ate up what was left from Sunday's meat, and then the rest of the week there'd be hot pot and liver and onions and all that, you know, anything like that. Mostly, well, the cheapest food really, I mean, liver and the offal and things like that. Oh, and tripe and onions was my dad's favourite. He loved tripe and onions. but you didn't. I don't think anybody bought convenience foods in 1920s, 1930s. No.
Was there a lot of credit in the shops, or did people have to purchase through cash?
There was credit, yes. Yes. It was, I know Mrs. Rees at the shop, she used to have a little, put it on the slate kind of thing, you know. But my mum and dad, whatever we wanted, we had to save up for. And if we hadn't got the money for it, we did without. And John was brought up the same way. And we've brought our boys up the same way. You don't buy anything on credit because you pay twice as much.
So, leading on to that, what about clothes? Were they bought, or were they second hand? Were they hand me downs?
Well, of course, I was lucky, you see, being the youngest of seven, and my elder brother, my youngest brother, was 8 years older than me. Well, of course, I couldn't wear the boys' clothes. And then the next to him was Stan, and next to him was Dick, and then there was Alice, and then Elsie, and then Harry. And of course, Harry was married, Alice was married, Elsie was married, and then Stan got married. So everything that I had to be bought. Unless, of course, if Mother had a coat that she'd finished with, well, it was taken to pieces, washed, and Father made me a coat, being a tailor, you see. And one thing, when I went to the high school, I always wanted was a gym slip with a pocket in the side, because everybody had a bought gym slip at the time with a pocket in the side. But of course, being a tailor, my father took me to the warehouse and bought me the best blue serge and made me a gym slip out of the best blue serge. But it didn't have a pocket in the side. Oh dear.
Staying on sort of relationship with your parents, did they play with you at all when you were a child, or?
No, my mother was 42 when I was born.
Yes.
You see, and father would be 44, I think, 5. So, of course, they were older. But I have my friends, you see, I have Phoebe across the road and two or three boys who live down the street, and we all used to play together, you know. We played hopscotch and skipping and the usual things. And the things which children do now, which you say, oh goodness gracious, have they no respect, you know? Tie a piece of string to a house doorknob and then go next door but one and tie the string to it and then pull the string and it pulls the knocker, you know, and people come to the door and you're away. Yes, now, if they did that these days, that would be awful, wouldn't it? But I remember my brother doing that. Oh dear, yes.
So, going on to discipline at home then, who enforced discipline?
Father.
Your father?
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes. I remember my sister telling me when she was about 18, I think he was, they wanted Harry, my brother, was going to a dance. And Elsie and Alice, they both wanted to go to this dance. And Father said, no, indeed you can't. And so my brother said, look, I'm going and I'm going to take my sisters. He said, if you can't trust me to look after my sisters. So they went.
So, in general, did you have a good relationship with your mother and father?
Yeah.
So they would be good parents?
Yeah. Yes. I don't ever remember having a smack. No. I thought I was going to one day, because I was doing my homework. My father came and he said, you don't do it like that. And I said, yes, you do. That was how Miss Murdoch told us to do it. And he said, no, that's not the way to do it. So I just picked the bottle of ink up and threw it. And then I realised what I'd done. I ran out through the back door, down the garden, over the back wall, across the field, and I sat with my paddling my feet in the water thinking, oh dear me, what have I done? And then Bill, my brother, he came and he said, it's tea time, mother told me to come and get you. He said, and I wouldn't do that if I were you. I said, what? He said, paddling that water, it's got bloodsuckers in it. Which meant leeches, of course. Well, I just flew back in, crying my eyes out, and my mother said, whatever's the matter, love? So I said, oh, Billy said, I'm going to die because I've been putting my feet in the ditch and it's got bloodsuckers in it. So of course, oh, don't cry, love, never mind. So of course, I didn't even get told off then. You know, when I think back, I must have got away with murder.
You talked about playing with friends.
Yeah.
Did you generally, most of your play take place outdoors?
Mm. Yes.
So just describe in more detail the sorts of games that you played.
Well, I mean, when we were small, it was ring a roses and that kind of thing, you know. And then we played whip and top and hopscotch and tig. But skipping was a big thing. We either had our own small skipping ropes or else we had a clothesline and we used to put it right across the street. And we'd have the big line going, you know, and it was a case of all in a bottle of gin, all out a bottle of stout. And as we say, all in, everybody jumped in and kept the rope going and you had to jump in. And if you got your foot caught in the rope and stopped it going, well, you were out, that's it. And then when they were all spinning, all jumping in, you know, and then they shouted, all out, a bottle of stout, and you all had to get out quick before the rope caught you. Yes, it was fun that. We had great fun with skipping. I can't think what else. Oh, we used to dress up. My friend Phoebe across the road, we used to go in her house sometimes because she just had one brother and he was older, he was at work, so I went to play with Phoebe in their back, and sometimes we played dressing up, or spent hours dressing up. We were all kinds of things, kings and queens and princesses, and oh dear me. Yes, it was very good.
Do you ever remember going on holiday, Aunt Dorothy?
We didn't go. We didn't go on holiday every year, but when I was, I think it must have been when I was about 9 or something like that. One of my father's brothers, he'd married a Welsh girl and they lived at Bulthquin, and so we went to Wales to visit. Oh yes, and that was nice. We'd been to Wales. So, I mean, it was like going to the ends of the earth, wasn't it, in those days? Yeah. But, no, things, it didn't run to family holidays.
So it wasn't something that happened every year?
No. Had to wait until I was married for that.
Did anyone drink in your family?
Occasionally. They didn't go out drinking. You know, it wasn't a case of going out every night drinking. Billy, my younger brother, he was completely teetotal. I don't ever remember him having a drink at all. Now, Stan, the painter and decorator, he belonged to the golf club. He played golf quite a lot, and he used to have a drink. Now, Dick, the other brother, the one who died, he was the greenkeeper at the golf club at the South Photo Links, but he didn't drink. Now, Harry, he was married then, of course. I think they just used to have a drink at Christmas and anniversaries and birthdays and things like that, you know. But so far as my family were concerned, they weren't drinkers, no.
What about smoking?
Sam smoked. Dick smoked, yes. 5 Woodbines. 10 Woodbines for, what, 5? No. 5 Woodbines for a penny or something. I forgot what it was, wasn't it? I know there were small packets, small green packets like that, and they had 5 cigarettes in. It was something on the thing. Very cheap. But Stan, the older brother, later on when he was working, I remember he used to smoke Capstan Full Strength. I remember that because I tried one once. Yes. But during the war, I smoked all during the war. Everybody did. It was a case of, well, you just did it automatically. That was it.
What about church? Did you go to church as a family?
Or, no, not as a family. But I went every Sunday. I went to Sunday school every week without fail. I went to Sunday school. And so did my Billy, my younger brother, until he was about 14, and then he stopped. But I went. And then, of course, when I was in Emmanuel Guides, Phoebe, she belonged to St. Cuthbert's Church at Churchtown. It's right opposite to Mills Hall. And She used to go to St. Cuthbert's, so I decided I would go to St. Cuthbert's Sunday School because I wanted to go with Phoebe. So there we are. That was another mix, you see. I was back at Church of England again. My goodness. And then I worked for 20 years in St. Augustine. And everyone thought I belonged there. Oh dear. But it,
what was Sunday school like?
We had a very nice teacher. She was called Daisy Jones. They have a nursery at Churchtown in Southport. Her father was a nurseryman. She was a lovely person. She was very nice. She taught us, well, everything. Good manners, to respect people. It was the same as with brownies and guides.
What about weddings? Did you attend any, you know, were there any rituals attached to them?
I went to my brother's wedding, Harry, the eldest one. I remember. I don't remember the wedding itself. I know it was in chapel, but I don't remember the wedding itself. But I remember in the chapel, in the hall afterwards, I remember sliding along those floors with any boy I could find. I think I was about eight then. Yes. But Alice is... my sister Alice, she married a man from Yorkshire, Normanton in Yorkshire. So I went on holiday once to Normanton in Yorkshire when I was about 8 or 9. But unfortunately, that marriage didn't last. He went off with somebody else. So my sister came back home with her two children. So that was that. But Stan's wedding. And Dick wasn't married, of course. Dick lived at home until he died. Stan's wedding, he married a girl from Oxford Street. So, of course, I didn't go to that one. So, there we are.
Well, come on to education. I want to ask you a few questions about the schools that you attended and the sorts of subjects you studied. Which school did you go to first, Dorothy?
St. Simon's and St. Jude's Church School.
And what age did you start?
5.
What's your earliest memory of school?
Going into this great big room and they... all the big girls sitting there at the desks. And I looked round and, oh my goodness, you know, it seemed to be endless. It was just one big long room. And of course, well, they left school at 14 then. And when I first went, like I was in the infant, that was in a little hall at the side. But when we moved up into the junior school, of course, there was this big hall then. And there were all the big girls in there, 14-year-olds, you know. Goodness me. But the funny thing was, I was with those 14-year-olds because the school photo down here, and I was with those 14-year-olds because I was in that class when I passed my 11 plus. Now then. That's my mum and dad. That's my mum, rather. And they, those soldiers were billeted with her. And there's my brother, Billy. That's the youngest brother. And Harry is the one with the soldier's cap on. And then there's Dave. And Elsie is at the far side. That's my eldest sister. And the other one was Alice. But this was my school photo before I went to the high school. That's me on the front and all the big girls at the back. This is another one. That's me again there. Next back row, second in. And I remember coming home. I came home from school one day. That dress was blue velvet with a white collar. My brother came in from school because he went to Churchtown County School, same as John. Came in from school and he burst out laughing and he said, "Good Lord, you look like little Lord Fauntleroy." And I, of course, I cried and Mother smacked him, making me cry. Oh dear. But I got these out because they had a reunion at Southport, at St. Simon's, you know. And my sister, before she died, she sent me the invitation. And so I got these out and put all the names down. So all the ones I could remember. I think there were only a few, about three missing. Couldn't remember them. But this girl next to me and this one, they both passed their exam at the same time as me, but neither of them went to the high school. So obviously their parents couldn't afford, but mine made the sacrifice for me because my other two, the others did go. That's the old St. James's Church.
Can you tell me the subject that we taught?
Oh, reading, writing and arithmetic. Yes, and geography, and history, the history of the British Empire. Yeah, that was at the elementary school, but at the secondary school, of course, we had everything with physics, science, history, geography, maths, algebra, geography. Geometry, arithmetic, algebra, geometry, French.
Can you describe at the elementary school? Can you describe the classrooms? What were they like? What?
Well, they were just bare, apart from the desks. They were long desks. In some of the classrooms, in one of the classrooms, the desk for two, and they had a little inkwell, and you had an ink monitor, and you had a milk monitor, and because we had milk every day, of course, and so it was good if you were a milk monitor, or if you were the ink monitor, you know, filling the ink. So,
what was the writing material? Was it paper or slate?
In the infants, it was slate, yeah. And then, of course, later on, It was paper. But I, as far as I can remember, the only things on the wall were maps. And they were all maps with the British Empire with the pink all over them, you know. Yes. That's, we were taught to be royalists, I think, you know. We really were. Because we had, of course we had May Day. There was always May Day celebrations. And the horses, the Shire horses, you know, with all the horse brasses and everything. And the coal men and everybody, they all came out with the horses. And then, of course, there was St. George's Day. And on St. George's Day, we all went to Hague Avenue, where the football ground is, and we had country dancing. And then we all sang Jerusalem and, all the rest of it. Yeah. But we really were taught to be patriotic, yes, no doubt about that. And it's the same with the Brownies and Guides. Even now, I can remember the Brownie promise, the guide promise, but I'm blowed if I can remember the guide law. I know I promised to do my best to do my duty to God and the King and to help other people at all times and to obey the guide law. But what the guide law is, I have no idea. I can't think of that. I'll have to ask. I'll have to ask my granddaughter.
What was discipline like at school?
It was quite strict, but the cane wasn't used in the high school. It was detention. If you'd done something very, very bad, if you had a Saturday morning detention, you had to be really, really wild, you know, to have a detention.
And what are the, what about the elementary school? What sort of discipline was
there? Oh, well, if you didn't do as you were told, you got a slap. That was that, yes. But, I mean, the boys, I think the boys got the cane, but the girls got a slap, yes.
What were your favourite subjects at elementary school?
Oh, English and history. Still are.
And when you went to high school, they continued as subjects that you enjoyed?
And French. I love French, and you know, I wouldn't go to France if they paid me, but I enjoyed my French. I got 91% for my most of my exams, yeah.
What was your relationship like with the other pupils, the other children? Was it a happy place?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Mm. Yes. So the high school, you're talking about the high school now?
Well, both schools. Your whole education experience.
At the infant school and the junior primary. It was just a case of you went into school and you played in the playground and then you went home and you went with your friends, of course. I mean, my best friend, of course, was Phoebe, who didn't go to St. Simon's. She went to Georgetown Primary, but my friend there was my cousin Belle, and she lived down Lawson Street, just a bit across the road from my grandfather Howard. So we went everywhere together. Yeah. I went on holiday once to the Isle of Man with my aunt Anne, Uncle John and cousin Belle, yes. So that was very nice.
Was there any physical exercise in school?
Oh, yes. We used to have Yes. P-E. Not P-T. P-E. Physical exercise. Yeah. It was, yes. Arms in, arms out. Arms in, arms out.
How often did you do that?
Oh dear, once a week. But at high school we played hockey and we played cricket in the summer or tennis. I didn't play tennis, I've never liked tennis, but I played cricket. And I was in the hockey team, I liked hockey, yeah. Oh, and I loved gym. At the high school, we had a lovely, the big hall, and there were wall bars and ropes, climbing ropes, oh, yes, and swinging along the wall bars. Oh, do you know, I really, oh, I loved my gym. I did.
What was your parents' attitude to school in general? Were they positive about it?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes, they wanted me to go, and that was that.
What about uniform? Was there a uniform in both schools?
Yes. Not at the infants, not in at St Simon's, no. That was just wear anything, you know. But Southwark High School, it was green and silver. Dark green blazer. Ordinary gym slip, navy blue gym slip. But you had a green and silver tie, green stripe, diagonal stripes, and a green girdle to go around your gym slope, yeah. Oh, yes. And then, as I say, this green, like a forage cap, to wear in winter, if either that or your black velour with a green and silver band round, or the Panama in summer with a green and silver band round, and SHS, Southwark High School, on me. Just make sure that it knew where you belong. Oh dear.
Did you like the high school?
Yes, it was very good. I enjoyed it. I liked the science mistress, Miss Finch. She was elderly, and some of the girls, they used to make fun of her because she had quite a few hairs on her chin, you know. But, oh, she was a nice, she was very, very, very nice. And then there was Miss Johnson, taught us French in the, when we first started in like what would be now a reception class. And then when you moved up into the high school proper, it was Mademoiselle Laurent, and she was, oh, she was lovely. But she used to come into the room, you know, and if I was talking, then she'd, Dorothy, asseyez-vous, you know. Dorothy. So, pardon, mademoiselle, go and sit down, you know. She was lovely, but she had left suddenly because her parents died. So there we are. But I really did enjoy my French. History I liked very much.
Did boys and girls learn together or separately at
not
school?
In the high school. In the junior and primary school, yes. They were together. They were together at St Simon's until they were seven. And then, when they were seven, the boys moved up either to Wennington Road School or Churchtown County, and the girls then stayed on till they were 14, unless they went to the high school. But, of course, in high school, they were all girls. And the grammar school, the one for boys, was just a bit further down the road, King George V, yes. It was very convenient, that.
did you have lunch at school, or did you go home for lunch?
No, we went home. I used to bike 2 miles to school every day, and 2 miles back at lunchtime, and then back again.
Yeah. How long was lunch?
12 till 1:30. And, yes, it was a bit of a rush, but I used to like my bike. I had a bike from being 7 years old until I was 65. I gave my bike away when I was 65 because I thought I might be a danger to everybody else on the road. So, with having arthritis in my knee, I just couldn't get started, you know.
Did you go to school full time all the way through?
Yes.
Or were you a half timer?
No, full time. Everyone went full time.
Okay then. Mm. So, at what age did you leave the high school?
16. I was 16 in the March when I left in July. 16.
Okay, so you left school in July.
Yeah.
1936?
Yeah.
What did you do when you left school? What job did you get?
First of all, I went to night school, and there was Mr. Loveridge. He used to be headmaster at Ainsdale, and he encouraged people to learn shorthand and typing, and so I used to go to night school for shorthand and typing, but in the meantime I got a job on Lord Street as in a, I was just going to tell you the name then. Ferguson's on Lord Street. It was a hat shop, ladies' hat shop. And I was in the office. So I got a job there in the office. I was there until the war started. And then, of course, when the war started, I had to... where did we go? The Registrar General's office were evacuated from London to Southport, to Smedley Hydro. So I got on at Smedley Hydro as a civil servant, you see, in the Registrar General's office. So I worked there until I got married while I was there to my first husband. And I had to leave when I had my first little baby, you know. So it was a very enjoyable time there, because the people from London, they really were very nice, and being upstairs, transfer room, it's still at Smedley Hydro now. Everybody's particulars. I was in the green identity card section, issuing green identity cards with the photos on, you know, for special areas.
People. Just going back to your first job, you worked in the office at the ladies' hat shop. Mm-hmm. What sort of wages were you paid, and how many hours did you work a week?
Oh, do you know, I can't remember. I have no idea. Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Don't worry about that.
No.
Did you work full time?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I used to work 9 o'clock till 5, I think it was. 9 till 5.
Was that 5 days a week, or did you work at weekend as well?
That was including Saturday, because Saturday was the busiest time, you know. Just had Sunday up, it was 6 days.
Okay.
But when I was at Smedley, that was only Monday to Friday. Just 5 days.
Doing war work?
Yes. I started off on the lower floor in the transcript room. Everybody had to fill forms in and everything. And that, those forms were transcribed onto these things. And I was doing that. And then, must have been the supervisor, it was the HEO, higher executive officer, in charge of the transcript room. And he suggested that I could be transferred upstairs to the RG's office. So I went up there, very posh. So, but it was very good, yeah. But the only thing was, of course, we did fire duty when the air raid came over, the bombs came over, toward Liverpool. They dropped a bomb one night. It was in the grounds of the blind baby's home at Birkdale. It was very close there. Cracked a few windows. But
was anybody ever killed in Southport?
Yes. And it was one of the London people, Mr. Cheetham. He brought his mother. He came over to Southport and he got a house in Chestnut Street, and he brought his mother over to make sure she would be safe. And on the way over to Liverpool, they dropped a bomb, and she was, when the air raid siren came, she went under the stairs, of course, like everybody did, and it was a direct hit on the house. So she would have been better off in London. But that was very sad, very sad. But I can't ever remember anyone else. That was the only one, the only person I know in Southport. Mm.
Okay, so you worked there throughout the war? Mm.
Yeah.
As a civil servant in Southport?
Mm.
And you also got married?
Yeah. My first husband, he was a signalman on the railway. And then later on, he, what you might say, took his hook.
Were there any children?
Yes, I had two boys, but one is down in London, and the other one, he lived down in London, and he was a bank manager, and it was the most amazing coincidence. John's sister, Emily, she lived in Southport, and he'd gone over to Southport. He got a phone call to say Auntie Emily had died. So he went over, of course. I stayed here with John William. And while he was in Southport, he got a phone call from London saying Michael had, he was the bank manager, he'd come home from work, gone into the bathroom, and had a massive heart attack and died. He was 54. And on the same day, my nephew Nicholas, my eldest sister's son, he'd gone to Dubai to a golf tournament, and he'd won the golf tournament. come back to the hotel, went to the bathroom, and Liz thought he was quite a long time, went to look for him, and he was on the floor. He'd had a massive heart attack. That was 3 in 1 day. Just like that. So, you never know, do you?
No.
But, it's with the same with my brother, Dick, the one who was the greensman. He went, you know, he was supposed to be, well, they didn't call him up at first because he wasn't fit. And then they, when he went into the army, he was B1. And then, of course, when they come out, everyone's A1 when they come out of the army, aren't they? But, no, he wasn't. So, he was 54 when he died as well. Yeah. It's not a good age, as I said. It's a good job I'm 87. Then. I've got out of the danger zone. Dear.
Just going back to work, Dorothy, I just want to ask you very briefly, your first job, was it a happy place to work? Was the atmosphere good?
Yeah. Yes. It was. It was very posh. Very posh. Being on Lord Street at Southport, you can imagine. And a ladies' couturier, you know. Only the people who could afford working great hats like that came in. And, yes, Miss Ferguson. She was very nice. She was a very nice person. So... I quite enjoyed that. And I enjoyed every minute of my time at Smedley during the war, you know, apart from when we were on fire duty. And they had those horrible mattresses. I don't know where they got them from, but they had a mattress for each person who was on fire duty, so that we could, in between the sirens, you know, we could have a nap, you see. But you always knew when anyone had been on fire duty, because in the morning they were covered in red flea bites. So where they got those mattresses from, Lord alone knows. But they certainly weren't new ones. So that was called saving money, I suppose.
Were there decent facilities at both places you worked at?
Oh, yes, yeah. We had... we didn't have... There wasn't a canteen at Smedley Hydro, but we used to go to what is the Royal Hotel on the promenade at Southport, and they had a canteen there, and so people from Smedley used to go to the Royal for lunch. Oh, yes.
Were you in a trade union at all?
Yeah. Yes.
Were you in a trade union in the hat shop or at Smedley's?
At Smedley.
At Smedley's.
And when I worked at St. Augustine's, yes, I've still got my card somewhere in the drawer. I never thought to get that out for you. Yes, I still have that. So.
What about men and women at work, Dorothy? Were they treated equally or paid equally, or was there?
Oh no. There was a gap between the. Yes, the men were definitely just one grade higher. Yes.
Even if you would be doing the same job.
I don't know. No, I think the men always got just a little bit more. Yeah, I think that was, until recently, that's been the case, hasn't it? Yeah.
Okay. I want to come on to the reason you came to Preston and to Frenchwood. Can you tell me about that? How did you end up living in Frenchwood?
John, he used to have a milk round. You know, his father had the farm, and John did the milk round. And he had a three-wheeler reliant van. And he was going down Warren Road, put his hand out, as they do. They didn't have traffic gates in those traffic indicators, you know. Put his hand out like that, go around the corner, you see. And he had a whole load of empty milk bottles. And as he went round the corner, the load shifted and his arm was out and he smashed his arm. So, the funny thing was, we went into Southport Hospital to see John's sister a few years ago. And as we were going along the corridor, there was a gentleman just coming along, and he looked at John and he said, "I think I know your face." And John said, I broke my arm once and came into hospital. He said, "You certainly did." He said, "And you are the luckiest man alive." We were just like that, whether to amputate or not. It was so badly smashed. So they told him that it was touch and go, whether he would be able to use his arm again, you see. So, he was kind of, he didn't want to do. And then they were wanting postmen. Preston, and so he thought he would have a bash at that. So he tried that, and the funny thing is, of course, his arm is as good as new. But after he'd been on post, on well, you have to do 12 months probationary period, and then after 12 months you're taken on if you're satisfactory, you know. Sign the Official Secrets Act and all the rest of it. So when he got the job, we saw this house at the top of Manchester Road, right opposite Lark Hill Street, right opposite the gate. And so we got that. And there's one thing that we've never forgotten. When we came, we opened the door, went in, looked all around, you know. Oh, we better get some heat on there. And there was a knock on the door. And it was there was a little shop at the corner called Elizabeth and Mary's, we found out later. And it was Elizabeth. And she came with a bucket of coal.
Well, it was very sociable.
Yeah. And next door to there were Mr. and Mrs. Hyam, and they had the chip shop further along. And, they were very nice. They were lovely people. And then on this side, there were Mr. and Mrs. Armstrong, who were very good neighbours, but very bigoted. Very, very bigoted. They had a huge thing of William and Mary on the front windowsill, you know, where everybody could see it. And, oh my goodness, yes. If Flo was in, now Flo was okay if little sisters came to the door, you know, like they used to for charity. Flo always used to put something in the box, as I did, of course. But if Lou came to the door, no. I think that was horrible. That was awful. But there we are. But it was so good of them, you know, to just come up. So thoughtful, wasn't it?
Just going back a bit, Dorothy, How did you meet John?
Well, I've more or less always known him. You see, my brothers went to school with him, and John had the half of the milk round that was a bit further out, and John's sister used to bring the milk down Warren Road. So, of course, we both, we went to, what was it? There was a club at the, on the corner by where the shops were, my sister's butcher shop and the cake shop, and then there was this little club. And we used to go in there and play billiards, snooker, and table tennis and things. And that was where I caught up with John again. So that was that. And the rest is history, isn't it?
When did you marry? When did you marry him?
1950, January 1955.
Okay, and you came to live in Preston soon after that?
Yes, we came, I think it was the August when we went up there, yes. And then, of course, there was the Compulsory Purchase Act, Compulsory Purchase Order, rather, for those, all the houses on the corner. Well, it was a whole square. There was Dixon Street. They didn't pull those down because they were quite new houses. But there were all the shops. There was Walmsley's, Paul Walmsley's, on the corner. The furniture, they have a place in Briargate, Mr. Walmsley's. And then there was the house. There was Mrs. Matthews, Mrs. Crowley. I never found out whether her name was Mrs. Matthews or Mrs. Crowley. Her son was Maurice Crowley, that was it. And then there was Lou and Flo, and then ours, and then Mr. and Mrs. Hyatt, who had the tube shop, and then Elizabeth and Mary. And of course, they had to come down. So, having bought that house, we got full purchase price for it, full market value rather. So this one, number 248 Selborne Street, that was advertised in the paper. So we went to have a look at it and decided, yes, it needed a lot doing to it, but we'd have it. So we found out afterwards why it hadn't been sold. The person who lived in it before, he put his head in the gutter. Yes. So I think people were a bit wary of it. But we didn't know that when we bought it. But it was a good buy for us because we got a grant and we had a bathroom put in the room over the stairs, at the top of the stairs. Took 2 feet off the middle bedroom and made a lovely little bathroom and toilet. So that saved going outside in the backyard, because I was frightened of going in the backyard until I walked out up at Manchester Road when the rabbit, John had a pet rabbit, the young John, he was 5. And he had a most beautiful pet rabbit who was white. We called it Snowy. And it used to sit on the windowsill. And people going past on the bus, they used to look and then look again, you know, as much as say, is that alive or is it an ornament, you know? And it was Snowy sitting on the thing. And she was a lovely, lovely rabbit. Very, very tame. But I was hanging the washing out one day and I just stepped back and I hadn't realised she was behind me and I stepped on her. And of course she bit me, and she bit my ankle. And after that, I didn't let her out, because every time I let her out, and I went to go to the outside loo, she used to make a grab at my ankles, because it was only natural, I'd hurt her, and that was it. So, the postman at the time, Joe, I just said, you know, I'm frightened to death of Snowy. I wish we could find a home for her. So he said, we'll have her. He said, my boy would love it. So I said, oh, that's good. So lunchtime, and he went to St. Higgs. And anyway, at lunchtime, he appeared with his trolley, and he took the rabbit and the hunch and off on the trolley, and that was that. So he was thrilled to bits, and I got rid of my poor little rabbit.
I'm just going to come back a little while before we move on to talk in a little bit more detail about Frenchwoods. I want to just ask you about your spare time, your leisure time after you left school, when you became a teenager and a young woman. What sort of things did you do then?
What sort of things? Oh, well, I was in guide, of course. And there were always boys. Always lots of boys. We used to go dancing. I used to love dancing. That's one thing I miss. John can't dance. He's never been able to dance. He's got two left feet. And that's it. But I used to go dancing with my niece. She lived next door. And we used to go once a week to a local hall, you know. Mm. And we went old time dancing and we went modern dancing. I really enjoyed dancing, liked it. There we are.
Did you go to the cinema?
Oh yes. Apart from the one at the end of the road, you know, Mrs. Knight also owned the one at Churchtown called the Savoy, which is now a petrol station, but it was the Savoy cinema then, and I used to go there. We used to go every Saturday to the Savoy. The Tiv, and we called it, and it was the Tivoli, of course, but we called it the Tiv. I used to go there about Monday and Wednesday. Of course, I could believe it myself when I went there, seeing that Mrs. Knight was family friend. But she also, as I say, owned the Savoy. But her husband, he was going from the from Southport, from the Hyde Park, up to Churchtown with, you know, the old rolls cellular film in the back of his car, and he caught fire and he was burnt to death.
Mm.
Yes, it was. So after that, she sold the Savoy, and then after a while, she sold the Tib as well and went to live with her son and daughter-in-law. So we lost touch. My niece at Longbridge is still in touch with Daisy, but Douglas. But they're just odd little things come back to you, you know, you forget all about them and then suddenly it comes back, doesn't it? Yeah.
Did you ever go in pubs as a young woman?
Oh no. Oh no.
Why was that?
Oh, good gracious. Decent girls did. No.
So if a young woman went into a pub, she was looked down upon?
Well, so far as people round about where I lived, yes, nobody went in. No. It was something you didn't do. That was that.
So it was a male preserve, the pub?
I think so, yes. Yeah. But, of course, the golf club was different. John's sister, that vase there, that one there, and a big one in the front, about like that, she won those, Lady Captain's Prize at the Old Links. And of course, well, it's different drinking in the Old Links, you know, drinking at the golf club. I suppose that's different, isn't it?
Yeah.
Aren't they snobbish? Oh dear, dear, oh dear.
So, did your leisure activities obviously changed as you got older?
Oh yes.
And then, when you started courting, how old were you when you started seriously courting for the first time?
Well, for the first time, about 18, yeah. And then, that fell through after 12 months. And then, like my first husband, I started going out with him when I was 19. And we got married when I was 21.
Okay. So, and you had two children then?
Yes. So.
Okay.
But, yeah. That was. I've got a. I had one. Wait a minute. I've missed a bit out. I had one miscarriage before I had Michael, who died. And I only found out afterwards that, and that was when my John was born, the other one at Southport, when he was born. He was the first child in Southport Infirmary to have a full exchange transfusion. I have a queer blood group. I'm rhesus negative, but I have so many antibodies, my blood's of no use to anyone but myself. So I have a letter to prove it, because after John had his exchange, I gave blood for 13 years. And then when I gave my final pint of blood, well, I didn't know it was my final then, I got a letter the week after saying, thank you very much for donating blood after all these years. You now have so many antibodies, your blood is of no use to anyone but yourself. When I did cry when I got it, I said to John, I'm no use to anybody now. Because I thought, well, giving you a pint of blood every 3 months, you know, it's neither here nor there, is it? If it saves a life, I mean, it saved my boy's life. And there we are. William, when he was born, of course, things had changed then. He was just on tablets for about 2 weeks. He wasn't jaundiced at all. But John, oh my goodness, he was perfect when he was born, and within half an hour he was the colour of that orange. And they just said, would you give me a name for your baby? And I was just flabbergasted, you know, I didn't know what to say. And the first name that came into my mind was John, of course, like John, and grandfather, and Howard is my brother Dick. His name was Richard Howard. So I said, oh, John Howard, and that was that. So by the time John had got from work to the hospital, he'd been baptised, and that was that. But it was quite a shock. It those.
So you had two surviving children with your first husband, two
yeah.
sons,
mm-hmm.
and, yeah. and they're both still alive?
No, the first one, the eldest one, Michael, he's the one who died when he was the bank manager down.
Oh, yes,
yeah.
I'm sorry,
yeah.
Martha, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, where did you live in Southport when you were on your own then? Did you go back to your parents?
No, I had my house. It was across the road from the parents, and it was next door to my eldest sister. So,
you were surrounded
by family.
Oh, okay.
Oh yes, and my brother lived at the end of the street. So all the family, and my other sister, she had a butcher's shop at the on the corner, you know. So all the family were kind of round.
Yeah. So when you met John, when you used to, when did you start
here.
Seriously going out with John?
After Bert had disappeared. Well, it wasn't a case of going out seriously with him at first. I used to go to the club with Emily, John's sister, and we played snooker together and table tennis and that, and then I played with John, and then John suggested we go out, you know, he said, we'd like to go out for a meal, and so I did, and that was that. So.
Okay. Did John adopt your two children?
No, they were living down in London then. They'd left home because they didn't get on with the father. I think they'd had enough of his wanderings, put it that way, to put it nicely. So, anyway, poor man, he died of cancer, so it was... you wouldn't wish that on anyone, would you?
No.
No.
Okay,
so,
then.
So
you moved to Frenchwood?
We moved down here,
yeah.
like this, across the
yeah.
road.
So you purchased your first house?
Yes.
And this was 1955?
Yeah. Oh, no, we moved on top there, 1955. We were up on top 5 years before we moved down here.
And how much did your first house cost?
About £375, something like that. It was more. It's laughable these days to do anything. So, we went to the bank to see about making. Dividing the money between William and John, and putting it in a trust fund, that's it. It's gone in a trust fund now for them. We can't touch it, it's in their trust fund, but they can't touch it until we die. So there we are. It's so that in future years, it will avoid inheritance tax. And we said, well, we won't come anywhere near inheritance tax. And he said, how much is your house worth? And I said, I've no idea. But one further down the street has just gone for £9,500. How big was it? I said, well, just an ordinary mid terrace with three bedrooms and a backyard. And he said, how big is yours? I said, well, we've four bedrooms and we're end terrace and we have a garage, a new garage, and garden at the back. He said, my dear, you have seriously underestimated the value of your house. So he said, I said, well, I thought it possibly about 100,000, you know. He said, you'll have to go up a lot higher than that. So, I mean, those are the things you don't think about, aren't they? So, there we are. So, that's well, we thought it would be a good idea to take out a trust fund or an enduring power of attorney. That was what I was trying to think of. So, in case, if anything happens to both of us, I mean, if we're in the car, you never know, do you?
So you came to Frenchwood, you had two children, two boys.
Well, yes, eventually. We only had one, of course, only had John up there. William was born when we were across there. But he's 7 years younger than John. But we bought some stuff for him, just, I think it was, in Church Street, and she said, we'll deliver it for you if you like. So I said, oh, thank you very much. So when I said Frenchwood, she said, oh, aren't you lucky? I've always wanted to live in Frenchwood. If you told anyone you lived in Frenchwood now, I think you'd probably say, oh, you poor thing.
So, at the time you came to Frenchwood in the mid to late 1950s, it was a very sought-after
place. Very sought-after place.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Can you describe the area where you lived? Were there a lot of facilities, shops, pubs, that type of thing?
You mean down here?
Well...
Or up at the top?
At both places. Both.
Well, up at the top... There was Elizabeth and Mary's, and then there was the Hyams chip shop further down, Ross's second-hand shop, and then on this side of the road there was a watchmaker. You went up three steps to get into his shop. He was a little old man. He was a lovely man. And then coming this way there was Hollinhurst, of course. And next to Hollinhurst was Joe Little. Well, Joe wasn't in it very much then. It was his son, Stan and Elsie, lived there. So
what sort of shop was that?
That was a sweet shop. And they had two children, Dorothy and John Little. Yeah. And then next to that, after that, there was the bonded warehouse. That was where Tommy Besant used to walk up every day and salute his front door before he put his key in and went in. He was an old soldier, and it was quite a performance. That was when we lived on top there, and I used to see him coming home. He was an ex-postman. And he walked, he was very smart, he walked, you know, quite straight, stood in front of his front door, gave it a military salute, and then put the key in the front door, and that was that. Oh dear, quite a character. And then, when we moved down here, of course, people, they've always been friendly. Mind you, I like people. I like talking to people, and I think that goes quite a long way, really. If you don't, some people find it very hard to smile and be friendly, don't they? And I think it goes quite a long way if you go halfway to meet people.
So,
makes a difference.
John worked at the post office.
John was at the post office. Yes.
Did you work at all?
Not until the children started school. And then John Newson, who had the butcher's shop opposite to Hollinhurst, he had a son, Brian, and they owned the kiosk down on Ashworth Grove on the corner. There's a new house being built now. Oh, a super place. But they used to be like, it was just like a little cabin, and they sold ice cream. And Brian's wife, she used to go into the kiosk and sell the ice cream. It was mostly for the grammar school boys when they were going down to the playing fields. When they came home, when they came out off the field, they had a drink of, in winter, a drink of hot Vimto, or in summer, it was ice cream. Anyway, Iris, I think she was expecting a baby. And so, John said, I don't know what to do about the kiosk. He said, Brian's working, you know, and Iris can't do it. So he said, I don't suppose you would like to do it, would you? So I said, I have to think about it because of John, you know, young John. So I said, I'll speak to John anyway, see what he says. Anyway, we arranged that, yes, I'd go down. So I worked in the kiosk down there for a couple of years. And then I went to St. Augustine's. It was when both boys started, when William started school. And I said, well, on a postman's wage then, that was nothing. I said, I'll have to do something, but I don't know what. Because I'll have to be here when the children come home from school. They're not going to have a key and come home and, you know, see to themselves. Anyway, I got this job at St. Augustine's at lunchtime on welfare, and I was there 20 years. And, I really did enjoy it. It was lovely.
What did it involve?
Well, when I first started, we used to go into the kitchen at 11:30, and then we used to, the cook and Mrs. Cobb, who used to help in the kitchen, they got all the things ready, and then we used to put the tables out and the chairs, and it was like family service, you see. So the welfare people, that was myself and Mrs. Waddington and Mrs. Towers, we used to sit at one of the tables and serve the children, and we had our dinner with the children. And it was really nice. I enjoyed it.
Was this a junior school?
No, infants.
The infant school?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yes. And, I really enjoyed it. Miss Westwell was her mistress when I started. And then when Miss Westwell retired, Sister Christine took over. And, she was lovely. And then, after Sister Christine, it was Mrs. Warbrick. She was deputy head under Sister Christine, and that was that. Mr. West was in the juniors. I think he's still there. Mrs. Warbrick's, she retired, she took early retirement, and then I think she goes back on time, but, you know, if anyone needs her. But it was a happy school. It was a really happy school, yeah. Miss Westwell was very, very strict, but she was so fair.
Was it a very close-knit community?
Yeah. When I first went, there was just one. There was just one coloured boy in school. That was Ian Wiltshire. He was Caribbean. And not Ian, Mark. And he died when he was 15. He had meningitis. It was very sad that. William did a sponsored bike ride from here to John O'Groats in aid of meningitis for it, you know, because of Mark, because of Ian, of Mark rather. Ian, I think he's a PE instructor now. He's enormous, he's unbearable. Gosh, well, typical Caribbean bloke, you know, he really is a big lad, yeah. But it was a happy school. No, I remember Sister Mrs. Swarbury. Miss Westwell never allowed anyone to go on the grass underneath, you know, under the window before you get to the yard. No one was allowed on the grass. And if anyone went on the grass, we had to take them in. Put them in the hall. Well, I always used to give them three warnings. So, one day, I took this child in. Oh dear, what have you been doing now? Well, he keeps going on the grass, sister. I keep telling him not to, but I think he forgets. I said, I think they were playing, you know, and they were running round, and he didn't realise it was on the grass. Oh, well, all right, she said, I'll take your word for it. So off you go, don't do it again. And off he went. So, that was it. But there were two children fighting one day, and they were really going at it, you know, having a right good do at each other. So I got hold of both of them, and I said, right, come on in. So I took them into the hall. I mean, you couldn't do that these days. You don't touch them, do you? But I just got a hold of both of them, took them in the hall, and Mrs. Forbrick was just coming through, and she said, oh dear, what have they been doing now, Mrs. Taylor? I said, they've been fighting. So I said, I thought I'd better bring them in before they cause some damage, you know. Oh, well, if they want to fight, let them fight. And she got hold of one by the scruff of the neck and the other one by the scruff of the neck, and she said, go on, fight. And just then the doors opened and Sister Christine came in, and she said, oh, my goodness, what's happening? And so Mrs. Warbrick said, they wanted to fight, sister, so I was just telling them to go ahead and fight. Oh, no, she said. Come with me, boys. And so she took them out into the library and sat them down. And another day I went in at lunchtime, and there was a little boy sitting there at the table, and sister was with him. And she said, hello, Mrs. Taylor. I said, hello. She said, I'm just showing this little boy how to play. She said, you know, Mrs. Taylor, he doesn't know how to play. She was a wonderful person.
Yeah. So you obviously had a very enjoyable experience at St. Augustine's School.
Yeah.
What about living in the area generally? Oh, has it been a happy experience?
Oh, yes. Yeah. With nice neighbours across there. Mr. and Mrs. Fitz Morris lived next door to us, and Mr. Fitz Morris, he just said to John, have you been in, do you go in the Labour Club, in Frenchwood Club rather? And John said, no. So he said, oh, oh, you're not a member then? And John said, no, I don't know anything about it. Oh, well, he said, if you want to join, I'll put your name down. And he said, you can come with me now when I go in on Thursday. So he put John's name down, and he was a member of the club, and that was it. So he used to go in on Thursday up until 2 years ago with Charlie, who was a bowler. And then Charlie died 2 years ago, so that's that. I mean, you know, they were so kind, really nice. And on this side, it was very funny. There was Mrs. Borjak, and what are they? Polish. Yeah, Polish. And Mr. Borjak, on one New Year's Eve, John had just let the New Year in, and we closed the door, and all of a sudden there was a rat-a-tat on the front door, and he opened the door, and there was Walter. And you know these mats they used to have, the traffic excluders behind the doors, like black fur things. He had one of those on his head. And he'd come to wish us Happy New Year. But a bit after that, he came and hammered on the door. It was when we moved across here. And he said, Mr. Taylor, he said, my Maria, she's very poorly. So John said, what's the matter? He said, I don't know, she's in great pain. Anyway, John went, and he said, Walter, the only thing to do, he said, I'll get the car out and take her up to the hospital, you know. So he took her to the hospital, and of course she had gallstones. It's no wonder she was in pain, poor Maria. But it was, you know, little things like that that come to mind. You forget about them and then they come back. But Walter, of course, he's dead now, unfortunately. He was a character. He used to work at Bamberbridge somewhere, and he used to come home at lunchtime and then go into the cell board, and Maria wouldn't see him again till tea time. Just used to disappear, you know. That was it. But he was a grand bloke. He was really nice. But and then they had a daughter, Vanda, and a son, Joe, and the other son was Leslie. Now Leslie got married and went to live away, and Vanda lived somewhere on the outskirts. She married a policeman. But she came across one day and she said, Mrs. Taylor, I've changed my name by Dean Paul. So I said, oh, have you? Oh, very good. So she said, yes, I thought I'd let you know. And she said, Joe's changed his name. So I said, oh, has he? What has he changed his name to? So she said, well, he's kept the same initials, JB, but he's Joe Brown now. She said, go on, laugh. I couldn't believe it when he told me. She said, fancy, of all... She said, he could have had a really posh name. He could have been Beecham or something like that. Beauchamp, you know. And then she said, he changes it to Joe Brown. So, there we are.
So you're a very, you know, you obviously had good friends and good neighbours down the years, and it's been a happy place to live.
Yeah. And last week there was a young man standing on the corner there, and he came across the road and he said, it is Mrs. Taylor, isn't it? And I said, yes. So I said, do I know you? So he said, I'm Michael Rye. So I said, oh my goodness. He said, I used to live at the end of the house here. I said, yes, I know. When it was an old house, and they'd when they pulled the houses down, they moved away, you see. And So he said, he said, you know, how's William? And I said, oh, he's fine, thank you. He's married now and he's got two little girls. So I said, oh, that's fine. So I said, now, I live in Buckinghamshire. But he said, I come up here on business. And next time I come, he said, I'll get in touch with you and then perhaps we can have a get-together. So I said, all right, I'll tell William. So this is... That's him. I thought, well, goodness me. it's surprising.
So this is your son's junior school?
That is, yes, that's Frenchwood Infants. That's Infants. And this is the Infants.
So this is the, the 1960s? Mm.
And this is, this is 1960s, that's 1970s. This is John. Where is he? He's somewhere. He's on there somewhere. Here. That's our eldest son. He works on telecom.
So that's the 1960s.
William was born in 62. Now, that was just before William moved up to Moor Park High School. He didn't want to go to Ashton because John had been to Ashton, so he didn't want to follow in his brother's footsteps. So he decided to go to Moor Park. So he did. But this was another of our neighbours, this one, this little boy. His name's Sarinjit Singh. And they lived a few houses down. His dad had the shop on Friargate looking ladies' wear, you know. Sarinjit and Jinta both helped their dad in the shop, you know, when they got older, when they left school. But his mum came across one day and she said, Mrs. Taylor, can you make hot pot? And I said, yes, why? So she said, would you teach me how to make it? She said, Jinta and Sarinjit have had it at school and they said they'd like some hot pot. So I showed her how to make hot pot. So that was that. But it's right. Surprising.
Okay.
What happened with all these?
I'll finish there. Thank you very much. That's been really interesting.